This week on Vaticano, join us as we explore Pope John Paul II's role in the fall of communism in Europe. We'll also take you to Rome's Pilgrim Office to discover their activities for the upcoming Jubilee year and learn about the proper ways to venerate and preserve holy relics. For this and more, Vaticano starts now.
In a university, vision and awareness of purpose prevent the coca-colization of research and teaching, which would lead to spiritual coca-colization. Unfortunately, there are many disciples of spiritual Coca-Cola.
Pope Francis compared the current educational trends with the spread and popularity of Coca-Cola and called for a stop to what he called the Coca-Colization of education. The Pope gave a one-hour lecture for the annual celebration of the university at the Jesuit-led oldest pontifical university in the world, which is called affectionately in Rome simply La Gregoriana. The Pontifical Gregorian University was founded by the founder of the Jesuit order, St. Ignatius of Loyola, in 1551, and since then has educated 16 popes and 24 canonized saints. This year, Pope Francis has significantly enlarged the university, merging the Jesuit-led Collegium Maximum, the Pontifical Biblical Institute, and the Pontifical Oriental Institute into one Gregorian university.
Nella visione di un'unica università.
Welcoming the Pope, Father Mark Lewis, rector of the university, said that this visit by Pope Francis marks a milestone in the history of the university, and he noted that uniting the missions of the three educational centers into one university highlights a commitment to the Church's evolving needs and priorities in the field of education. In his lecture, Pope Francis remarked that education was once a privilege, and this condition has not yet disappeared. So the Holy Father called for the university to carry the scent of the people. The event concluded with awards for several students and a private meeting with a group of Jesuits.
Even mortal bodies will awaken on the last day, and those who have fallen asleep in the Lord will be associated with him in triumph over death.
Pope Francis commemorated All Souls Day on November the 2nd with a mass at Rome's Laurentino Cemetery. The mayor of Rome and over 100 faithful welcomed the Pope to the city's third largest burial ground. Pope Francis laid white roses on the Garden of Angels memorial stone and paused for a moment of silent prayer. Established in 2012, the garden offers a dedicated space for families mourning the loss of children, including those lost to miscarriage. Fittingly, the Pope's prayer intention for the month of November is dedicated to those who have lost a child. Instead of a homily during the Mass, Pope Francis remained in silent prayer, and at the end, he led people in a special prayer for the deceased.
Per Cristo nostro Signore.
Amen.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. Pope Francis received members of Project Hope, a program dedicated to supporting the spiritual and emotional healing of individuals affected by abortion. Active across much of Latin America, the initiative aims to help those seeking reconciliation, forgiveness, and the experience of God's mercy. We must not lose hope, Pope Francis said during the meeting, because evil does not have the last word, it is never definitive. Pope Francis celebrated a Mass in St. Peter's Basilica for deceased cardinals and bishops, honoring seven cardinals and 123 bishops who passed away in the last year. The Holy Father prayed for them, describing them as shepherds and models for the Lord's flock, who love the church in their unique ways. In a video released on the eve of All Saints Day, French feminist Marguerite Stern offered a sincere apology to Catholics hurt by her provocative actions as a female activist from 2012 to 2015, including a campaign supporting same-sex marriage. In February 2013, she and other feminist activists entered Paris's Notre Dame Cathedral topless to celebrate Pope Benedict XVI's resignation. Now, less than a decade later, Stern has emerged as a prominent voice against the extremes of woke movements, particularly transgender ideology. The Congregation of Sister Claire Crockett, a young nun who died in 2016, has announced the beginning of her cause for beatification. Born in Derry, Northern Ireland in 1982, Crockett joined the Servant Sisters of the Home of the Mother, dedicating her life to various apostolates in Spain, the United States, and Ecuador. She died on April 16, 2016, when a magnitude 7.8 earthquake struck Ecuador's Manabí province, claiming at least 673 lives, including hers. The Vatican has opened a center to welcome pilgrims and tourists visiting St. Peter's Basilica. The center offers practical, artistic, and spiritual guidance, particularly in anticipation of increased amount of pilgrims during the 2025 Jubilee year. As always, thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. In Rome, Andreas Tonhauser for EWTN Vaticano.
After the break, we take you back to the night the Berlin Wall fell. Discover the role Pope John Paul II played in this historic moment. Next on Vaticano. November the 9th, 1989, viewers turned on their TVs and could hardly believe their eyes. The Berlin Wall, a structure that had divided the city for nearly 30 years and seemed immovable, had fallen. This event, now 35 years ago, set off a chain reaction that led to the collapse of the Soviet Union and the end of communism in Europe. For many in Europe, it was a miracle. Others see it as the work of a man canonized by Pope Francis a decade ago.
I am absolutely convinced that without Pope John Paul II, the German reunification would not have happened.
When Martin Rottweiler was born, Germany was split into East and West. The future director and founder of EWTN Germany watched the Berlin Wall fall on television on November the 9th, 1989.
I was in Rome at the time because I was working for a magazine here, and I saw the fall of the Berlin Wall on television. The whole thing seemed so surreal to me. You see people climbing over the wall. You see masses of people streaming from East Berlin to West Berlin. It was simply unbelievable. As a child, you grew up in this situation where you were told, there's the Eastern Bloc and there's the West. There's the Warsaw Pact on one side and NATO on the other. That was cemented.
Martin Rottweiler is not the only German who's convinced that John Paul II played an important role. The German Cardinal Joachim Meissner, who died in 2017, was a personal friend of the Polish Pope.
After all, John Paul II changed the world. Without him, there would be no Solidarność movement in Poland. I also don't know whether communism would have come to an end without John Paul II. So, the merits of John Paul in the downfall of the communism can certainly not be overestimated.
Communism
Shortly after his election as Pope, Pope John Paul II began working behind the scenes to help suppressed opponents of the communist dictatorship. In 1981, John Paul II survived an assassination attempt and decided to consecrate Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, just as Our Lady had told the children of Fatima to do.
Matka Boża.
Our Lady told the children of Fatima that Russia should be consecrated to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And at the same time, Our Lady encouraged them to pray the rosary for the sins of mankind. The Holy Father, John Paul, decided to carry out and accomplish what Our Lady asked.
Cardinal Stanisław Dziwicz, the former Archbishop of Krakow, was John Paul II's private secretary during his entire papacy. In an interview with EWTN in 2016, Cardinal Dziwicz recalled the consequences of this consecration.
I can only say what I've heard from the bishops of the Eastern countries. From this consecration, a process has begun that has ended with the freedom of those nations that were oppressed by the communism and Marxism. After this event, the world became a different world. Not only the fall of the Berlin Wall, not only the fall of the Iron Curtain, but also the fall of Marxism in the world, which was rooted above all in the universities and in circles all over the world.
When Pope Francis finally canonized his predecessor in 2014, the former Chancellor of Germany, Helmut Kohl, recalled John Paul II's first visit in 1996 to a reunified Germany in a newspaper article.
I remember the evening of June 23rd, 1996, as if it was yesterday. There was a demonstration on the east side of the Brandenburg Gate because of the Pope's visit. On the way there, the Pope and I walked together from west to east through the Brandenburg Gate. At that moment, he took me by the hand and he said, "Mr. Chancellor, this is a great moment in my life. I, the Pope from Poland, am standing with you, the German Chancellor, at the Brandenburg Gate. And the gate is open. The wall has fallen. Berlin and Germany are no longer divided. And Poland is free."
The Polish Pope then addressed a few words to the Germans in German.
May God give you and your German fatherland the strength to complete this work.
Before Martin Rottweiler founded EWTN in Germany, he had also met John Paul II personally in Rome. For him, the Polish Pope's contribution to the collapse of communism is undeniable.
If anyone had any doubts about it, the best witness is Mikhail Gorbachev, the then General Secretary of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, who himself testified that without John Paul II, this revolution would probably not have taken place, or at least not in this peaceful way. And John Paul II was a very early supporter, especially of the Solidarnosc movement in Poland, which stood up against the communist state. In this respect, I believe he made a very, very great contribution.
Thirty years after the end of the Cold War, Europe is at war again.
Yet, we have strayed from the path of peace. We have forgotten the lesson learned from the tragedies of the last century, the sacrifice of the millions who fell into world wars.
On March the 25th, 2022, 1 month after Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Pope Francis decided to repeat the grand gesture of John Paul II.
Therefore, Mother of God and our Mother, to your Immaculate Heart, we solemnly entrust and consecrate ourselves, the Church and all humanity, especially Russia and Ukraine. Accept this act that we carry out with confidence and love, grant that war may end and peace spread throughout the world.
The war in Europe goes on and costs more lives every day. But if the life of John Paul II has shown one thing, it's this: miracles often happen when you least expect them. Is preparing to welcome millions of visitors for the Jubilee year. As pilgrims pass through the holy doors, Opera Romana Pellegrinaggi, the Diocese of Rome's Pilgrim Office, has planned a series of events aimed at transforming visitors from tourists into true pilgrims. Sister Rebecca Nazzaro, recently appointed as the office's first female director, shares her vision for this pilgrimage experience.
Il nostro desiderio è quello di...
Our desire is to welcome the pilgrims who will come to Rome, to plant seeds of Christianity, seeds of evangelization within them, not just a tourist experience that remains solely engaged with the city's beauty.
Is there also people who are coming who might be not Catholic, who might be not considering themselves as part of this church? Is there an openness for the Catholic Church when they come to Rome?
Sì, questa è la nostra sfida. Noi come comunità abbiamo proprio questi percorsi.
Yes, this is our challenge. Yes, as a community, we offer these art and faith tours. When people book an art and faith tour at the Vatican Museums, they find a sister like us. And they're often a bit surprised, thinking that the art and faith tour within the museums might be more like a catechism class. So, the tourists are initially a bit puzzled, wondering why they ask for a guide and a sister has arrived. Since our tour starts from a historical foundation, then the person is gradually led to realize that opening oneself to faith is not about going against one's own identity or humanity. Instead, it's an enrichment of what a person is called to be in life, both for oneself and for the common good. So in the end, a tour that should last 2 hours, or 1.5 hours, often goes on longer because so many questions arise. This is the wisdom and insight of the Church.
Why would you say should people come next year to Rome for the Jubilee?
Perché è un dato storico. Perché il Giubileo è nato qui a Roma. Come dicevamo prima, un dato di popolo.
Because it's a historical fact. The Jubilee originated here in Rome. It's a tradition of the people. Here, Cardinal Stefaneschi conducted a study and discovered that there was this custom where, at the turn of each 100 years, the people of God would come to Rome to receive God's forgiveness through the tomb of Peter. He writes that it's a beautiful thing. In this great flow of people, he met a man who was 107 years old. This man had received a message from his father in the year 1200, when he was just 7 years old. Remember, if you live to see the year 1300, remember to go to Rome and receive this great forgiveness before the tomb of Peter.
Davanti alla tomba di Pietro.
We'll be back after a short break with the story of ancient relics and their powerful impact on the faithful.
So when I found out St. Jude was here, I couldn't wait. There were already people in line, and I know there's a lot of people waiting to come in, and I think it's wonderful that we have that opportunity.
St. Jude, he brought me into the faith and brought me back home. He's been a powerful intercessor since I learned about him.
And this is the St. Jude's statue. You want to be a part of the relic, to be touched the statue today?
Do you have any thoughts, any prayers that you're going to go in there with? Anything you want to teach your children about what you're about to encounter?
One big thing is the relics in general, teaching them about relics. Being that he's the apostle of the impossible, praying for the conversion of family.
A remarkable journey is unfolding as St. Jude the Apostle's arm, a relic that has not left Rome in over 1,700 years, now graces the United States. While St. Jude's tomb rests in the Vatican, these pilgrims have the rare honor and tremendous blessing of encountering this beloved apostle up close.
Relics are a conduit of God's grace, and they perform feats that are astounding. And it should be no surprise to us, because the saints always remain connected with their remains. So what we hear about in Scripture repeatedly is every time relics are mentioned, two things always occur. There's always a healing. There's never not a healing. Touch is the way by which the healing comes about. Not because relics are magical, they're not magical, but because the entire saint is present in his or her relics.
Here at St. Ambrose Catholic Church in Salt Lake City, people of all ages encounter this ancient treasure, awakening a faith that relics uniquely bring to life, stirring awe and relevance across generations. Father Carlos Martins, acting as the arm of the Vatican's relic ministry through his work with Treasures of the Church, is responsible for extending St. Jude's reach and bringing the arm as an instrument of catechesis to the public.
People come to these events for all kinds of different reasons. Some come because, hey, I heard there's a relic of St. Therese, the little flower, going to be present. Been devoted to her my whole life, and I am not going to miss this for the world. Others come because there's a history here, and they're history buffs. Others come because they have no faith, but they heard that this is happening and they can't believe that in today's day and age, something as macabre and stupid sounding as someone bringing a bunch of remains and displaying them, so they're gonna check this out. We've lost a lot of the focus of our identity as church, not the least of which was a break with the practice of veneration and devotion of relics.
Relics have held a sacred place in Catholic tradition for centuries. Yet in many places, like at the Charterhouse of Florence, Italy, relics lie hidden, forgotten, in darkness, and awaiting rediscovery. Don Bernardo, the custodian of the relics at the Charterhouse of Florence, shows Anthony the various articles preserved throughout the monastery. For generations, relics have endured as silent witnesses of faith. In honoring our heritage, they carry forward an ancient mission with a true modern need for revival.
Normally, relics were kept in a protected place. And in this case, at the Carthusian Monastery, they are kept in a chapel. The Chapel of Relics. Some relics are indeed in very poor condition. In the past, they have been stolen, and then maybe sensibilities have certainly changed as well. Whereas in the past, they were held with great honor, over time, they have been somewhat neglected. They are shown on the days of the great solemnities, such as All Saints on the 1st of November. So that is why they are somewhat hidden. Although we, coming here, opened the chapel today and made it visible to visitors.
To ensure relics are venerated with respect and do not become mere souvenirs or items for collectors, the Vatican issued in 2017 the instruction titled Relics in the Church, Authenticity and Preservation. This document sets strict guidelines to authenticate the relics through documentation and careful identification, so only genuine relics are venerated. Safeguard relics with proper storage, handling, and display to preserve their integrity. Prohibit the sale and commercialization of relics, honoring their spiritual, not material, significance. These guidelines promote devotion and respect and revival for the veneration of relics. One of the initiatives is the Relic Project that aims to bring the relics back to the light and restore devotion. These guidelines support the reverent handling of relics during pilgrimages, such as the journey of St. Jude's Arm.
Seeing the relic was amazing. This was my first time seeing a relic from a saint. We go through stressful times in our life, just like all the saints, that St. Jude is praying for us.